Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, in our political segment each week, we often take time to talk about what's going on in the Trump administration, because there's always something going on in the Trump administration. And it sort of struck me that we really need to pay some attention to our state situation as well. I don't know whether you know this, but we're sort of coming up to the 2-year point without a budget. And we got some real problems in this state. So I wanted to speak with one of the legislators who might shed some light on this and maybe give us some hope for the future as to things coming together. Let's see if we can do that. My guest, Senator Karen McConaughey, she's a Republican from the 33rd District in Illinois. It's the West Dundee area. She joins us today. And, Senator, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you as well. Good afternoon.
So the governor gave his State of the State address. He gave his budget address. I did see some comments you made afterwards that you stated. You are actually very positive about the governor's budget address. But I got to tell you, as I listened to it, it just sounded like when he was done speaking, we're not going anywhere. So were you just being a good Republican, or do you really believe he gave the proper direction?
I think he gave the proper direction. You know, he presented a balance, the structure for a balanced budget. But he got very specific about taxes. And in some of those who did not have favorable things to say about his budget address, I've asked the question, when did he propose specific tax solutions? And most people have to agree, the governor got very specific in this particular budget address, something that he was accused of failing to do in the past. I think he gave a lot of structure to, you know, what kinds of spending caps he wants, what kind of reductions, what kind of pension reform, what he would consider in revenue, what he was willing to do in order to pass a permanent income tax. Things like that. I think those are very specific items that he has not presented before in the past.
I guess the perhaps the difficulty is that as he acknowledged, and he certainly thanked the Senate side of the aisle, your side of the aisle, so to speak, for getting things together with Senator Cullerton and Redonio and working things out. But then it seemed as though he was sort of saying, hey, and some of the pieces of this plan you're working on don't work with me. And I'm wondering whether you and or the leadership had any surprises from the governor. He didn't just buy it lock, stock, and barrel and said, keep going, we're there. He sort of said, you know, there's some things here I can't accept.
Well, I think that it was important and responsible of him to make clear what items he would agree to and what items he wouldn't. Because, you know, again, Republican governor, Democrat-controlled General Assembly, there's going to be give and take. But eventually, once we work through our issues in the General Assembly, it goes to his desk. After all that effort, you want to make sure it's going to be something that he can sign.
So where do we go from here? Because the one thing he also didn't really talk about, I'm not putting this on him, but the one thing nobody's talking about is, where's the House in all of this? I know you're on the Senate side. But the truth is, without Madigan's buy-in, even a fantastic plan by the Senate, and listen, I watched as Cullerton and Redonio held a press conference. I mean, it looks like we were on the verge of the grand deal. And then Madigan had nothing to say, and he has kind of his own thing going on. Have you heard anything? Where are we today? Is the House on board at all? Is there pressure on the House to do something?
Well, you know, I hear from individuals in the House, you know, a lot of encouragement for what we're doing in the Senate, you know, some excitement about the idea that a structured package might be coming over there. I think the Republicans over in the House now, they may have a couple of ideas that are a little different than ours, and that's okay. That's what it's all about. But I think they're excited to see something come over. You know, before we jump to the conclusion, before we jump to the conclusion that it's dead on arrival, that Madigan won't consider it, why don't we test it? Why don't we put something together and send it over there? Because the way I look at this is, if you can put together something or demonstrate that the Senate can resolve its differences, find a collective solution, and the governor can agree to it, then it does put pressure on the House to, offer, if you can't agree to it, work with us. Work with us and come up with some different ideas in order to get to a solution.
I know the governor has been, he's been tied to his own turnaround agenda, and he's in his credit, he's given a lot of things up, but there are a few points that we keep hearing about over and over again. We heard about him again. And I want to ask you, again, as a Republican, so I'm sure you support that turnaround agenda. A lot of Republicans, most Republicans do. But I think Democrats are saying, look, this constant call for term limits and redistricting reform, as much as Illinoisans want those, and I'll grant you that. I think if you go do a poll that Democrats won't allow in Illinois, and you'll get 80% of the people to tell you they want term limits and they want redistricting. Madigan won't buy into it. Cullerton won't buy into it. What is the answer when Democrats say that has nothing to do with a budget? Talk about money. Deal with that later. I also know you get shut down when you deal with it later. But what does it have to do with a budget?
Well, I think it has everything to do with it. That is the practical reality of how the General Assembly functions, this or any other General Assembly. It's the give and take. You want a budget. We want reforms. There's been nothing wrong with that approach. Frankly, I think the problem has been an unwillingness to engage on the reform side. I've watched the governor, agree to take a number of things off the table. I've seen nothing come off the table on the Democrat side.
Yeah,
and I don't want to sound partisan here, but at the end of the day, that's what's to be expected. And as far as the governor continuing to talk about term limits,
redistricting,
those two things, absolutely he should talk about those things. He should keep that on the table at all times because it is important to the people of Illinois. Now, some legislators might be frustrated, even annoyed with that. But if the people of Illinois are talking about that and saying those are the things that they want, there's not a thing wrong with the governor talking about it as well.
And I absolutely would not disagree with everything you just said, but I'm going to return to that question, because I think you're right. If Governor Rauner held a state of Illinois meeting and said, who wants term limits, you'd have every hand up except for maybe Madigan and Cullerton. And if he asked the same question about redistricting, you'd have every hand up except maybe for some judges who seem to knock down every plan that goes through. But that's not my question. My question is, we're almost at 2 years without a budget. He's holding on to those two admittedly very important items, but you have folks with social service needs and all that who are going, because you're fighting about those issues, which are good issues, we're not getting a budget. We're losing funding. So I want to repeat the question itself, which is, what do those have to do with the budget?
Well, I think let me see if I can try and answer this another way for you. I think that making sure that we have provided ample services to those who need it in the state are just as important to the governor as it is anybody else. And I never once did I hear in the speech from last week that the governor said, give me term limits and redistricting or else, give that to me or I won't sign on a budget. It's about the package. It's about coming up with a package of reforms, reductions in spending that the governor can turn to the people of Illinois and say, I signed a budget deal that makes Illinois a good place to do business in. It's a good place to live and seek a job, and you can afford to live here. I think that's how the governor looks at it. He's been saying that for quite some time now, and I thought he made that point very clear in his speech on last Wednesday.
And he did make that point. I still kind of stand by the fact that it's tough to understand. I'm agreeing with you on the importance of those issues. You're not hearing me fight you on that. What I'm saying is the governor just keeps tying to the budget, and I'm concerned that Illinoisans, suffer in the process because he and Madigan, and we'll toss Cullerton in on those issues, go at loggerheads. But you really do have a problem with the court system because even though you had Bill Daley and that, incredibly powerful group of people who tried to create a redistricting and very complicated redistricting plan that would pass muster with the court based on the decision previously of Judge Mary Mikva, they still couldn't do it. All the power and the money and the influence and what I mean is the brains in the world to put a plan together, and the court still said no.
I understand that. Let me give you another example of where I think it is appropriate to talk about reforms at the same time you talk about budgets. We're going to have to increase income taxes, right? Income tax, spread out the sales tax. Those are some of the proposals that are being talked about. And I'll take my own district as an example. And there are many districts like mine that are not just Republican and Democrat districts across the state that are experiencing some of the highest property taxes in the entire country. We are in many cases the cost of local government, in large part is education. That cost is borne through property tax and on the back of people who can no longer afford to stay in the communities they live. We're talking first-time buyers, we're talking about retirees, people who have contributed to their communities, where their property tax costs more than their mortgage costs to live in their house. And so to say we're going to add more taxes, and I represent a community, as do many, that have very, very high, crippling high property tax, then I need something to take back to my communities that allows them to reduce the cost of government, that allows them more flexibility to, again, reduce the cost of government. I don't think those are unreasonable requests when we're being asked to increase taxes, when clearly no one wants their taxes increased.
One of the things the governor has said, listen, Democrats pretty much have the votes to pass their own tax. They're not going to own it, right? So they want support. So with a proper budget, I'm imagining you and your colleague Republicans would be on board to accept an income tax increase, a sales tax increase, taxes for services, as long as they did other things like a property tax cap and well, toss in redistricting. If you get some of those other things, are you as a Republican prepared to vote for an increase in sales tax, service tax, income tax?
I'm prepared to vote for a package that is responsible, that provides relief to my communities and other communities, that provides adequate funding for education, that provides opportunities to reduce the cost of government at all levels, that provides a balanced budget for the state of Illinois on a pathway that shows that we have a sustainable plan, that we don't have to keep coming back year after year and asking people for more money. That plan would have to include things like work comp reform, things that signal the business community that Illinois is a good place to do business in, because if we can't create jobs, we can't grow our economy. Making changes that make Illinois a better place to do business would have to be part of the package. All those things I just mentioned are the kinds of things that you have to look at in its totality before saying, yeah, I'm going to sign on to a tax increase. It put the right package together, I think that you would find no one likes doing it. No one likes having to vote for a tax increase, but to put Illinois back on the right track, I think you will find many legislators willing to do that if they feel strongly that we are moving the state in the right direction.
One thing that happened sort of in an amazing way to a lot of people last year in the last year's election was it's Republicans who seem to get the support of the average working class, right? That's supposed to be the Democratic base. And basically Republicans, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, they all seem to go for Trump and for Republicans, feeling as though Republicans had the message of the average person. Is that possible in Illinois? The problem here is, of course, I was going to say Trump is a billionaire. So, I would say Rauner is this multimillionaire, if not a billionaire. So the question is, can Republicans accomplish the same thing in this state? It always seems that when you look at polls, people still seem to get in the Madigan corner rather than the Rauner corner, even though if you really listen to what they're talking about, sounds like Rauner's trying to do things for some workers.
Well, you know what? I think that the frustration that the people in Illinois have is not different than people all across this country, and it's Republican and Democrat who feel that they want something different from their governor. They want increased responsible spending. They want less government in their life. They want government focused on the programs that really are important to people, and they want to know that there's going to be job opportunities in the future. And that's not Republican versus Democrat anymore. And I think you saw in Illinois, if you're going to compare this to the Trump phenomena, there were Democrats voting for Donald Trump as well. It was the working class, which is a Democrat and Republican, who said we need a better way.
So as we wrap, let me just ask you, how hopeful are you that we get a budget? I know the right answer is, oh, I'm very hopeful. But, I mean, really, do we get a budget? You know, Liu Lang, system majority leader for the Democrats, once said in an interview with me that he could see us going 4 years without a budget. I brought that up to him sort of several months later, and he kind of backed off of it a little bit, saying, well, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it could happen. How hopeful are you that we actually get a budget?
You know what? We have to be more than hopeful. We have to be absolutely determined that we're going to get to a budget. It's the very minimum of what we owe the people of this state. This has been unacceptable and ridiculous that we have gone as long as we have without a budget. Every single member of the General Assembly has an obligation to put their political differences aside with one another and strike a balance that we can go home and demonstrate to people that Illinois is back on track. So I'm very optimistic because I think we just have to be absolutely determined that we are going to get that job done.
And we're going to monitor it as you guys work at it. Senator Karen McConaughey from the 33rd District of Illinois, thanks for your time. You've done
Thank
a good
you.
Job defending the governor's programs. We'll see what happens when it comes.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Senator.
Thanks.
Well, as you're enjoying that music, you're probably saying to yourself, I swear that's Handel's Messiah, but I've never heard it sound like that before. And you'd be right, because that is the version of the Messiah that plays only in this in the Chicagoland area, at the Auditorium Theater, every Martin Luther King weekend. Now, we're beyond Martin Luther King weekend as we're recording this, but we're going to be talking about the Auditorium Theater. But I have been going to that particular performance for many years now because it's one of the greatest moments in music that I think you'll have. You don't need to be religious. You don't need to be. It is a jazz gospel version of Handel's Messiah, and it just rocks the house. And so that particular show got me very excited as to everything that was going on at the Auditorium Theater, and so I wanted to make sure I introduced you to this incredible Chicago treasure for all it presents. Joining me to talk about it is the Chief Executive Officer, the CEO of the Auditorium Theater at Roosevelt University, Tanya Kestroverde-Moskalenko, and that is one of my favorite names to say. Tanya, welcome to the podcast.
Paul, thank you so much for having me this afternoon. It's so great to speak with you.
Can I call you Ms. Kestroverde-Moskalenko?
You can call me whatever you want. I think Tanya is easier, but you're free to call me whatever you want.
It's just so much fun. First of all, welcome, because you're relatively new to the auditorium.
Thank you.
And give people a little bit about your background. You were in Indianapolis, Memphis. You have some incredible experience. What brings you here?
What's interesting is that I keep heading north, so I'm hopefully stopping right here in Chicago and not go any further north. But originally from Cuba, moved to Miami, grew up in Miami, Florida, then made it to Memphis, Tennessee, where I spent almost 20 years, then moved to Indy. The last 4 years I was in Indianapolis, and then decided to move to Chicago to for the privilege and the honor to run the Auditorium Theater.
And they do incredible things. I'm active at the Auditorium Theater in supporting it and all that. I'll just disclose that. And they do some amazing shows. But talk to me a little bit about the building itself. You just actually about a year or two ago was the 125th anniversary, which was an amazing
right.
evening. Tell people why the Auditorium Theater is such an amazing place to see a performance.
Well, architecturally, it's such an amazing building, and it is ingrained in the history of Chicago. It was opened in 1889, and as you said, we are now in our 127th year. And the history, not only of the building itself and the architecture, but also of the artists who have been through here, in every genre imaginable. And it has gone through this historical curve where we've had everything from Anna Pavlova, the famous Russian ballerina who came here at the turn of the century, to then big rock bands and famous pop artists, to Broadway shows. There was a time when this was the Broadway house in Chicago. And now we do a lot of dance now, so we are seen as a place to come for international dance and, of course, for performances that highlight the best that Chicago has to offer, such as Too Hot to Handle.
And the acoustics in that house. I mean, you know, today, I don't know, the way they build theaters is, you know, get you better put on that Madonna-looking mic on your mouth or we're not going to hear you. The acoustics in the auditorium, they're just near perfect.
And they are, and it's amazing to think that this theater was built 127 years ago because they knew what they were doing back then. And all of the walls are curved, and so that certainly is what helps with the acoustics. And if you stand in the middle of the stage and you speak, even at the very top balcony, you can hear it without amplification. It is quite remarkable.
It is.
And I have been at a number of theaters all over the world, and I would say that this has acoustics that are unmatched.
And I have to say, I had the opportunity, Brendan James of America's Got Talent performed there one night, and I got to join him for a number. So I've actually had the privilege of singing on the stage of the Auditorium Theater. They wanted me to sit down. I refused to move, so they had to call in security to get me off the stage. But but it was really enjoyable. And by the way, now this you might know this because you know the history, but I came to learn. Do you know what they did in that building during World War II?
Bowling alley?
Yes. They've shown me how they covered the seats, whatever, and it was used, I guess, for, you know, the soldiers, whatever. It was a bowling alley. I mean, what tremendous history, you know, when you just really read through what that building has been through and what it means to Chicago. So the point is, if people haven't been to the Auditorium Theater, just go tour the place. Just go see this. It is truly
wonderful. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even just a tour, even if they don't have an opportunity to come see a performance, but just a tour of the place, because it really is. We always say if these walls could talk, they'd sing. But there's so much history ingrained in this building and on our stage. And this year, we are actually celebrating 50 years of the reopening of the theater because it was boarded up for over 20 years at one point and was not being used as a theater, as we just mentioned. And so in 1967, in the fall of 1967, the theater reopened, and it was the New York City Ballet that performed on the stage that night. So we are going to be celebrating that later this fall.
Oh, I look forward to that. And by the way, this is a bit of trivia, but it's something I know. The proscenium, you know, the beautiful artwork up at the proscenium was restored by a man named Auguste Baumgarten, who was a friend of mine. He passed away a few years ago, sadly, but he was responsible for that. But his wife is around, and she comes to the theater. She's the one who told me that he did that work. So it was really incredible. Hey, let's talk about some of the things coming up, because it's wonderful to talk about the theater. People need to see it, but it's better when they come see something there, at performance. So some of the things coming up in March, and of course, people listen to podcasts at all various times, so we're going to work through some time here. But the Thotos Dance Chicago is doing kind of a one-night-only performance on March 11th.
They are, and what makes that night so special, and frankly, I have to be transparent here, we were not aware of this big news when we booked the company last year. That is the last performance that this company will be doing.
So they're breaking up after this?
They are. It is the final company performance. The artistic director, Melissa Thotos, will continue working as an independent choreographer, and she will continue doing her work, but the company itself is disbanding after this performance. So it really is a special night, and we're so happy that that it is our stage that the company will be performing this very special evening on. So we were welcoming them to do the Wheel Trilogy, which incorporates Melissa Thotos' signature work, Reaching There and Getting There. And then it'll have her new piece, which completes the trilogy as well, and that's called There.
Fantastic. Actually, a friend of mine is the, assistant artistic director, John Cartwright,
who
performs with them. So I do know they do incredible work. You guys are especially known. I mean, if there's a name, you correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's a dance company name that is associated with you, I'd say it's Alvin Ailey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are the Chicago home for the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater.
And they're coming back.
And they're coming back, and we're looking forward to it. They're here March 22nd through the 26th, so there are many opportunities for Ailey fans and new fans to see them. And they're bringing such a vast array of performances of different choreography so that people can come back several times, not just come back one night. But the exciting thing about Ailey is that every performance does include their signature work, which is Revelations. And they will do that at every single one of the performances. That is such an audience pleaser, and I I can't see going to an Ailey performance and not seeing Revelations.
And speaking of Revelations, actually, there's at one performance, I think it's just one of those performances, there's a very special spoken word narration going on for people who might be familiar with another show in town that, you know, it's real easy to get tickets for, Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
And I'm talking about the narration of Leslie Odom Jr., who will
Absolutely.
Be part of one of those performances.
That's right. And that is the piece called Revolution Dream. And it is inspired by the sermons and the speeches of Martin Luther King.
Going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Coming up is that this really excited me because there was a note that the Boston Pops was coming. And then like a few weeks later, it said, oh yeah, Bernadette Peters is singing with them. And, of course, that has to just be blowing the roof off of sales. Tell me about the Boston Pops. And I want to confirm the date with you because I actually have conflicting dates on my calendar. So when will they be there?
March 21.
Okay. So much for my March 31st that I had my calendar.
I'm sorry. You're right. It's March 31st.
Oh, no, okay. So there you go. I thought it was the 31st. And I saw something that said the 21st. So I wanted to get it right. So it's the 31st.
Sorry.
Perfect. And the Boston Pops, I mean, they are so incredible. Conductor Keith Lockhart. But the Boston Pops have been around for a long time. People that don't necessarily like orchestral music, you got to fall in love with it when you're listening to the Boston Pops.
And they have such a history, you know, and so many people in our country know about the Boston Pops because of all of the years that they performed in PBS through their PBS specials. So they do have a very wide audience. Keith Lockhart has been with the Boston Pops, I want to say now, maybe about 25 years. So he has quite a history with them. And then, yes, we had originally announced that it was going to be the Boston Pops doing an all Gershwin evening. But then we had this fantastic opportunity to bring Miss Bernadette Peters to join the Boston Pops and do an evening of Great American Songbook
Gershwin.
Them. And so we're very excited to have her here. And they're going to do, so the Boston Pops themselves would just play the first part of the program. And then Miss Bernadette Peters will come during the second
Fantastic.
Part of the program.
If you need a place to stay, I'll give her a guest. I've got a
place. Oh, okay. Well, I will mention that and get back to you on that.
Oh, but, I love her work.
We're very excited that the fact that she can come and join them. She has not performed in Chicago, I would say, over the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's over 10 years. Yeah. And this is her auditorium theater debut.
It is. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
It is.
All right, so that's going to sell out. Looking forward to into May, you've got the Eifmann Ballet of St. Petersburg. More dance?
We do, and they are always a very popular company to bring to Chicago. Chicago has an amazing population of Russian, a very large Russian community,
yes.
An Eastern European community, and he is very much admired both in Russia and in Eastern Europe. So he has a tremendous following here, which is why we bring him back every 2 to 3 years with new works. This year he's doing Red Giselle, which is a ballet based on the life of Olga Spisitsa. And it is her life story. So it's not the traditional Giselle that people think about when they
right.
think of classical ballet.
Going to be fantastic. And then you close the season with the Giordano Dance Chicago. We actually have the artistic director of Giordano Dance on a future podcast. So we'll talk specifically about that particular performance coming up. But that being said,
wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
What closes your season.
It does close our season, and that is part of our Made in Chicago dance series, which highlights, again, we love to highlight our local artists, our Chicago artists, because they are world-class artists. And so the auditorium brings in artists and companies from all over the world, such as the Eifmann Ballet that we just talked about, or Bernadette Peters, Boston Pops. But we also like to highlight our Chicago artists. And Giordano Dance Chicago is such an excellent company. I've known Nan for many, many years. And one of my previous lives, when I was directing a theater in Memphis, I actually brought the company to Memphis to perform there because I think so highly of their work. So we're very excited to have them as part of our dance series here, our Made in Chicago dance series.
They only made one mistake that I can remember in their career, and that was when they had their Dancing with Chicago Celebrities, they invited me to judge it. And I think that was probably
I think what they needed to have done is invite you to dance with them.
Well, I have done that for another organization, but I was judging people, man, and I was just, you know, I was just judging them by their dress, you know, and who they are.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know. And who bribed me. This is Chicago, you know. They were able to purchase. I'm kidding.
I'm learning all about that.
And I do want to make one note as we wrap that in the summer, you've got your Made in Chicago Summer Dance Intensive. So we've got something for aspiring dancers.
We do, and that's such a wonderful program where we bring in about four local dance companies to work with local students who spend an intensive week learning about different dance forms. So actually, Giordano Dance Chicago will participate this year, as will Thodos. Melissa Thodos will be participating. But it gives the dancers, Joffrey will be participating, it gives them an opportunity to see the different dance forms. And even if it's classical ballet or contemporary dance, there are different styles of teaching it. For example, with the ballet, you can have the Vaganova style, which is a Russian style, or you can have the Royal Ballet Academy style. So it gives the dancers an opportunity to see and feel and experience these different styles of dancing. I believe in the past we've had Ensemble Español be part of this, so that the students also learn Spanish dance. And it just really sort of solidifies for them what they want to do and which direction they want to go into. It just expands their horizon as young dance students.
And just very briefly, we'll talk again with the new season, but can I assume that we will have a new season coming up of the same kind of variety and fabulous stuff?
We are hoping to present the Chicago audiences with some very exciting stuff. We will continue to have our international dance series because that is something that our audiences love. Our subscribers love to come to dance here. It is a fabulous space for that. But we want to also add more music, also expand our Made in Chicago series so that it's both a music and dance Made in Chicago series. So we're looking forward to a lot of exciting things in the year to come.
And I'm looking forward to it. People should check out the Auditorium Theater at auditoriumtheater.org, right? I have that right?
Yes.
And theater is spelled the proper way, T-R-E.
T-R-E.
I'm always impressed by that. Anybody goes T-E-R, I'm like, am I so plebeian? T-R-E is auditoriumtheater.org is plebeian. And I have to compliment you. You have such an incredible team in the form of Judy Green and C.J. Dillon and Noe. I mean, I know you know that, but as somebody
Thank
who
you.
Attends and tries to be active with the theater, I'm going to just publicly give you a compliment on the incredible team that supports the work that you
Thank
do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate that and definitely do recognize that we have a great team of people here.
And I know that you're as excited actually to be running the Auditorium Theater as the CEO as the Auditorium Theater is to have you here with us. Tanya Kestroverdy-Moskalenko, one of the greatest names ever to be able to say. You actually should be a dancer. That's like a dancer's name. Russian dancer? What do you think? Can we do that?
Actually, that's my background. I was a dancer.
See, I knew it. You couldn't put that name. You had to be a dancer.
Yeah, I was a dancer.
I thank you for your time.
But I think I can. I think my body is much more comfortable now at being behind a desk.
Well, if you ever join a competition and I judge it, you're going to win.
Thank you.
That's how we do it.
Thank you so much for today, Paul.
My pleasure. And I'm going to have my producer play us out with a little more Too Hot to Handle because it's great coming into it. It's great going out of it. So thank you for your time. And everybody check out Auditorium at Theater.
Fantastic.
Thank you,
Tanya.
Thank
you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.